Hey, everybody, this is the Variety and iHeart podcast, The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. First up today is Ricky Martin. The music superstar is talking about his new holiday movie, Jingle Jangle, how he's doing during the pandemic, and what he thinks of Latino support for President Trump. Then later, Nick Robinson. The Love, Simon star is here to chat about his new FX on Hulu series, A Teacher, with Kate Mara. Find out why he broke the promise to himself not to play another high school student. I'll have Ricky Martin coming up after this short break. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Ricky Martin admits he experienced severe anxiety at the start of the pandemic. Thoughts of not being able to perform live and for who knows how much longer overwhelmed the 48-year-old music superstar. But then he started to get creative. So creative that he started a new business, Martin Music Labs. Its first endeavor is Orbital Audio, a new sound technology that provides a surround sound system no matter how expensive or inexpensive your headphones may be. His latest album, Pausa, uses Orbital Audio and is heading into the Latin Grammys with 4 nominations. And next week, Martin will be seen in the new Netflix holiday movie musical, Jingle Jangle, from writer and director David E. Talbert. Martin voices Don Juan Diego, a villainous toy who comes between the town's greatest inventor and his protege. Martin also talks about his support of Joe Biden, and then he sounds off about Latino support for Donald Trump. I talked to Martin over Zoom from Beverly Hills, where he lives with his husband and their 4 children.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
All week, and I still have issues with with technical aspect of it. I hope everything is good. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been super intense, this lockdown, but great and productive. What can I say?
Yeah. How are you holding up in all of this?
Now I'm doing better. Now I'm good. In the beginning was a mess because I was super, super anxious. I had no idea. I mean, I always heard about anxiety, but what I was feeling, oh, this is anxiety? Well, then I'm super anxious. What are we going to do? They were telling us that, you know, no more performing. You know, that's what they were telling us. And now I see a little bit more. I see better, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and I don't see a train coming at me. But I've been very productive. I've been working on this movie for quite some time now. Super exciting.
It's a really fun movie.
I think this movie is historical. You know, we will be watching this movie for the next 30 years in the holiday season. So it's fun. That's beautiful.
Why do you think it's history making?
Is the story, is the cast, the people involved, David Talbert, and Lynn, they've been working on this for 20 years. It was not supposed to be released 5 years ago. It was not supposed to be released 10 years ago. It was supposed to be released now. And historically, we are supported. We are backed up. And this movie is going to be a success, just not only because of the messages and the acting and the music and the design and the whole thing, but because we need it. We need this kind of music now.
Yeah, I, you know, one of the things I was asking, I was doing the junket yesterday, and I was asking everyone, like, you get a phone call and either your agent, your manager, or whomever says to you, they want you for this movie. It's not only a Christmas movie, it's a Christmas movie that's a period piece with a Black family at the center of it. We just don't see that.
How can I say no to a project like this? Are you crazy? Yes, now let's do it. It's beautiful. And you don't have to be Christian to enjoy this film. You know, it's anyone can relate. It's for kids. But, you know, my mother, I'm sure she's going to get teary eyes when she sees this movie. It's very powerful. And it's fun. And it's hopeful. And it's optimistic. And it makes you believe in magic again. And it helps you be in touch with the child within that we all forget. You know, it's powerful.
So Don Juan Diego, who did you look to get inspiration? What was like, did you look back at any other characters, or was this just...
This is green light to be whoever you want to be and be vicious and Machiavellic and be mean. And then you have a director that pokes you and pushes you to be even more evil. I have my kids, because every time I was running the lines in my house, they would be like, that's not evil. You know, it's like, because you're looking at me, I'm still your father. And I'm like, yeah, so you need to try harder to be meaner. And I hope you become a director in the future because you have great instincts. It's been a lot of work. I'm not going to say it was easy. It took me, let's just say, a total of 7-8 weeks to polish this character. You know, first of all, Don Juan Diego, is he Castilian? Is he Colombian? Is he Mexican? So we went there and we played with all the accents, and I had a coach, a dialing coach next to me all the time. I think I grew as an entertainer. I think I grew as an actor with this project, and I hope many, many more to come. And I hope this is the first movie of Don Juan Diego. Did I just say that?
You did. Well, it's funny because my husband and I watched it together. My husband's from Mexico.
Okay.
Saying like, is he Mexican? Is he from Spain? And
we had to keep it very neutral. And I think that's a great way. But still, I'm talking in English. You are a fool. What are you talking about? I cannot believe you. There, you are proof that there are fools.
So, Ricky, you don't act very often. I mean, you have this. You did Gianna Versace, Evita on Broadway, which I saw. You were amazing in it. Glee. Why don't you act more? I'm sure you're a fan. And I'm sure you get scripts.
Thank you so much. I want to act. The first time I was in front of a camera as an actor, I was 15 years old and I was bit by the bug immediately. And then I said, forget it. I'm not going to sing ever again. I'm just going to move to New York and I'm going to record my music. Excuse me. I'm going to just go into Tisch School of the Arts and I'm going to become an actor. And then I was accepted, and then I went to Mexico on vacation and they gave me a role in this musical play. And I never went back to New York and I stayed in Mexico. And then music is evident that music needed to be part of my life. And then Ryan Murphy called me to do an episode of Glee. And then he called me to do Versace. I have mad respect for actors. I have mad respect for the career itself. I don't want to come across like, hey, I just feel like doing it and I want to do it now. I think that would be very disrespectful. I am learning. I am studying. I have professors with me. And I am selective because it's not something to be prostituted. This is something that needs to be well thought of. And mind you, with a lot of respect for everyone that has been on this career for a long time.
So now you've entered the space of the Martin Music Lab.
Yeah.
Orbital Audio, I've been listening to, okay, my husband kept teaching me, Piausa?
Piausa.
Piausa, okay. Piausa. And to screw it up. It really is, you know, listen, I'm not a sound person. I don't understand the intricacies. But when I listened to it, I was like, wait a minute, I'm hearing an instrument over here.
Right. So immersive audio is something that has been there since the 70s. When the lockdown started, I told my team, listen, we have to create something that is of impact. Let's create something that will heal people. I don't know what this is. I have no idea what this is. I don't know if it's a vitamin that we're going to invent. I don't know if it's a new kind of food, but let's be open. And then I was re-immersed into immersive audio. And I said, this is it. We just need to make this perfect. And I went to my producer and mixer, Jason Joshua, who is now my partner in this journey. And he said, Ricky, I don't think we can do much. And I did not let him stop. You have to keep doing. Let's be specific. I want to be able to grab one instrument and make it go around my head. And leave it here and then grab the horns and make them fly around my head. So people didn't know what it was going to feel like. And then all of a sudden you have A$AP Rocky and people like Bad Bunny and other young musicians that are, what is this? And I want this for my music and I want it for my entire album because it's the evolution. We had black and white television and then we had color and then we had mono sound and then we had digital and then we had the CDs and all of a sudden now we have orbital audio. I think is the evolution of music and sound. With this saying, the amount of tentacles that are growing out of this idea pushes me to do wellness apps with orbital audio where we can create guided meditation forums where we can just bring this kind of tranquility to people, where we have Tibetan monks or Gregorian chants singing around your brain. And with this, we are going to be talking to the medical field to see if there is something here for therapy for Alzheimer's or for depression or anxiety, because I know that with the anxiety that I've been feeling in this lockdown, Orbital Audio always helps me. And it's very special. It's very special.
So now, could you go back to your previous work and remix it with the new system, or do you have to do a whole new record?
I love how you think. No, we can go. I can go back to my classics and do it. And right now, my engineer is like, perfect. Just give me Living La Vida Loca. I've been dying to mix that song. And Living La Vida Loca on Orbital Audio with all those, the ska and the guitars. And then it's going to be very special.
Wow. So do you just think you're just going to record using...
I am going to record music with Orbital Audio in mind, because usually I record with a lot of reverb. And if I have less reverb, the effect of Orbital Audio will be more powerful. And that's what these artists that are trying Orbital Audio are doing. And they are in awe, because really they are seeing how their own music is evolving. Their own sound is evolving. And it's a new era. And we're just going to keep fighting for it, because... I'm not saying about a lot of things that are happening right now with this Orbital Audio thing, but it's all I have to say is that I will never stop touring, because I love the immediate reaction of the audience.
Right. And now maybe you're going to get more Grammys because of it. You know,
I was just nominated. I just have 4 nominations with this album, and I am obviously super happy. It doesn't matter how cool you try to be. When you get a nomination, it doesn't matter. You've been doing it for a long time. You go crazy. You go, ah! Is the Academy letting me know that I did something right this year. And Pausa in this album and Orbital Audio is all part of it. The reaction of the audience is my Grammy. You know, I have to say that. Of course, I would love to bring that with me home. But the reaction has been amazing. And then the reaction of my colleagues of this album has been very beautiful. People, you know, they come to me and they say, Rick, this has become the soundtrack of my pandemic. And for me, that's music to my ears.
So I did want to talk to you a little bit. We have an election coming up. Mm-hmm. You were with Biden in September.
I've been supporting Biden forever. I think he is the only option we have, and he is great. And he has been, you know, in politics all his life. And this is the moment. We all need to get together and be loud about the cores of this nation, you know. And I am using my social media. 70 million people, regardless if you're from the US or not, are listening to me every day talking about the importance of change, because it is scary.
What do you think when you see a governor of Puerto Rico endorsing Trump?
Who is that? Next. She doesn't exist. She wasn't even elected by the people. So she's not part of this conversation.
When you hear Latinos for Trump, what goes through your mind?
It is really scary. It is super sad. I think there's a lot of Hispanic that will vote him out. It's just that, you know, Trumpeters, they make a lot of noise. They, you know, and it's scary to see their enthusiasm. But us, we're doing what's right, the right way. And we'll see what happens in November. But I'm very optimistic. I am a Latino, gay, married to an Arab, living in Trump's America. We check all the boxes.
Has it scared you these last 4 years?
I you know, when you have 50 million people voting already, it's because we are not the only ones concerned about this. And for that, I am extremely happy. And we'll just take it one day at a time. And, you know, we've had plans of, listen, if we might leave the country. No, we have to stay here, and we have to fight for our rights and what we believe.
Thank you, Ricky. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much. And hopefully we'll see each other soon.
I appreciate it.
This thank is all you. Over for sure. Okay. Love and light to you and your husband.
Same to you, you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Ricky Martin. Jingle Jangle will be available on Netflix on November 13th. I'm going to take a short break, but when we return, I chat with Nick Robinson, star of FX on Hulu's new A Teacher. I'll be right back. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Nick Robinson melted teen hearts everywhere as the star of Love, Simon, the 2018 coming-of-age rom-com that made history as the first big studio film about a gay teen love story. The 25-year-old actor has now gone back to high school again. This time, it's for a much more adult storyline. In FX on Hulu's A Teacher, he plays a high school senior who has an affair with his English teacher, played by Kate Mara. I talked to Nick from Victoria, Canada, where he's shooting Netflix's upcoming miniseries, Made.
Hey, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Your hair is long.
I know. It's quarantine will do that to you.
So how are you? How are you coping in pandemic? You're working right now, aren't you?
I am. I'm very fortunate to be working right now. I am in Victoria, British Columbia, beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, working. The case count here is, I think, like 8 right now, something like that. So it's just a different, it's a different reality. It's a bit of a, it was a bit of a shock coming from LA. And, but I'm coping. Relatively well, I would hope, considering how crazy this year has been. I'm very anxious for the election, as I'm sure many people are.
Yep.
Obsessively checking 538 and all the other polling websites.
So what's your prediction? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh man, it's above my pay grade, Mark. I don't know these kind of predictions, but I based solely on the data that I've seen. It seems very likely that we'll see a change in November, which, please God, please God.
So let's talk about A Teacher.
All right.
Really great work. Thank you for making me feel really uncomfortable in a good way.
You're welcome.
So first of all, how did the project come to you?
My introduction to the project was back in February or March of 2019, which seems like a million years ago. And I sat down for coffee with Hannah and Kate. Our director, writer, and Kate Mara, our star. And we discussed the show and sort of what she was trying to do and what she wanted to say with it. And it was really interesting. I had a great feeling right from the meeting. There's sometimes you kind of just get a gut feel, and it's one of those times where that I just really enjoyed the coffee and the company and talking with them, and I left feeling like, oh, maybe this could be the thing. And then I read the scripts, and I thought the show was really interesting. I had a very interesting take on, especially as the series goes on these. On this relationship, on Eric and Claire's relationship. And I was compelled enough to go back to high school yet again, do another tour. And I think this is truly my last. I think I said that once before, but this was it. This one felt very different to me. It was not set solely in high school. I mean, there's later episodes that are after graduation. The subject matter just felt much more mature than the typical high school story. So, and it was a challenge. I thought the role was challenging. The story itself, I felt, was going to hopefully challenge audiences. So I'm very glad to hear that you were maybe uncomfortable at times, because that's, you know, I think that was means that we hopefully did part of our job. Talking about these kind of relationships, this show was talking about these kind of relationships in a way that was a little more nuanced and detailed than I had seen in the past. I'd seen the clickbait headlines. I'd seen some of the past stories, but I because it's a mini series, we really had the time to delve into the nuance and the complexities of the relationship, and then after the relationship is found out.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you said, the clickbait, those stories, you know, all too often we do see these stories. Teacher has affair with student, and we all click, and we're all expecting, you know, to die for. That's what we all think about right away. So do you do research on a movie like this onto, you know, guys who, you know, ended up having affairs with teachers, or do you not need to do that? I don't know. Like, do you have to understand the psychology, or is it something, you know, you're just playing a high school student and got caught up?
I think, I don't think that they're necessarily mutually exclusive. I think doing the research beforehand can be really helpful to give you kind of a macro view of the series. And then once you're actually, you know, playing the scene, then yeah, you're just a high school student who's caught up, I guess. But I relied heavily on Hannah for the research aspect, because she had been running a writer's room for several months by the time that I signed on. And so she had worked with a psychologist in the writer's room who dealt in, I specialized in male survivors, and had done a lot of work with men who had experienced abuse as teenagers and then were coming to terms with it as adults. And he had gone through a similar experience that Eric had himself, actually. So it was really interesting to talk to him and hear about how men internalize abuse differently than women sometimes, and how there's a double standard in terms of how society or the culture that can kind of way it treats the abuse, and sometimes we'll even celebrate it, which the show gets into a little bit. And how confusing that can be sometimes for men who feel like they should be happy about the relationship but have conflicting feelings about it.
Mm. So what did you learn from this psychologist? What did you learn from Hannah?
I think the main takeaway was just how long it takes often for men to see themselves as survivors or victims, because it's they don't want to be a part of that narrative, I guess, and or have that narrative for themselves. So oftentimes it's just, there's a, people overlook things and kind of retell stories to themselves in their head that are different than from what actually happened, maybe. There's sometimes a sort of a cognitive dissonance there. And I think the series in the later episodes is about both of those characters coming to terms with their actions and the consequences of those actions, and and Eric beginning to see how problematic his relationship with Claire was. And because he doesn't want, he wants to use the relationship, you know, when he goes to college, it's I don't know if I can give these spoilers away or not. Actually, I'm sort of just talking freely here, but Eric uses the relationship as a sort of social currency at times. And so just a lot of, there's a lot of conflicting internal push pull there, I think, of wanting to actually feel like wanting to feel sort of how he's portraying the relationship, actually feel like it was an epic thing, so to speak.
Right. So you said, I know you told Ellen that, you know, you had a rule, you weren't going to play a high school student again. Love, Simon came along. You said, yes, I'm going to play a high school student again. This, you're playing the high school student, like you said earlier. Did it take some convincing for you to do it?
Yes. I mean, I did not go into that meeting expecting to feel as good as I did about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. I was kind of going in thinking like, well, you know, I'll take the meeting, but I don't think this is probably the right next one for me. And then, yeah, I met with Hannah and I read the script. I was like, shit, well, I guess, yeah, I'm going to have to go back on my word. And, but I think, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to plan with this, right, business, and, you know, making ultimatums is maybe not the wisest.
Sure. Did you have an intimacy coach on set? Was there someone making sure everything was kosher and just everyone was feeling okay?
We had an intimacy coach at the very beginning, and Kate and I both decided, as a mutually both had a conversation, decided that it wasn't actually necessary for us. I mean, it's different for every person and every set, but for the set that we were on with Hannah at the helm, it didn't feel like it was actually a necessary piece. But I mean, not to say that, you know, I think it's a great tool. It just wasn't for us for this story.
Do you, because the relationship is obviously you're just getting to know each other as characters, do you and Kate sit down and try to just get familiar with each other beforehand? Or do you keep sort of, because you need that awkwardness. And do you keep that awkwardness by not getting to know each other too much before filming begins, not getting too comfortable with each other?
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes just depending on scheduling, that can kind of lend itself to we'll just kind of take care of itself in a way. Whereas when you're first meeting someone, if you're shooting chronologically, you're actually kind of first meeting them. And as you go along, you'll get to know them a little bit better. We had a few weeks before we started to get to know one another, and Kate's great. She's a phenomenal actress and a great scene partner. Also was a new mother at like, right. She was taking care of a newborn throughout this whole shoot, which was just doubly impressive. Almost superhuman. I mean, it was really, it was pretty amazing. Everyone, you know, it'd come into work like, man, I'm kind of tired. She'd be like, actually, you know what? Never mind. I don't even know what the word tired means. So that, I mean, she was great. And so we did have some time to get to know each other before, but I feel like we really hit our stride, you know, later on. And, she was a great collaborator and great in the show.
So you're up, in Canada, you're shooting Maid right now?
Yes. Yes.
So tell me about Maid. I know a little bit about it. Margaret Qualley and her real mom, Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
Tell me
mother and daughter. Maid is a story about how much about how hard it is to be poor in America and kind of the cruelty of the poverty in this country and the total the catch-22s of the welfare system and the social safety nets and how backwards it is sometimes. It's based on a true story by a book, based on a book by Stephanie Land. And yeah, it's basically about a single mother working as a maid in Washington State and trying to survive with government assistance and very meager wages. And the dangerous situation she's forced to put herself in order to provide for herself and her child. So another fun, lighthearted.
What character are you? Where do you play into all of this?
I play the father to her. We share a 3-year-old daughter together, Margaret's character and I. Sean is my character's name, and he is not not the ideal partner, to put it mildly. And so he's sort of non-supportive and making Alex, that's the character Margaret plays, Alex's life harder maybe than it needs to be. But he has his own issues, and yeah, it's great writing.
So what's it like? I mean, you said there's not many cases up there, but are there still the COVID protocols taking place? Is there testing all the time, or you don't have to worry about it up there at all?
No, we're being extra safe. Everyone on set is tested regularly. Everyone's wearing a mask. Everyone is in PPE and socially distancing on set. And everyone's taking it really seriously. I mean, it's even though the case count is really low up here, it's still like, you know, we are just in the midst of a global pandemic, and everyone is hasn't lost sight of that fact. There's been some changes, you know, on how we operate, but all in all, I think everyone's also really happy to be back to work. So we're just happy to make some sacrifices, like, or whatever it takes to have us get back to work safely.
Did you have to quarantine before filming started?
I did. Yeah. I quarantined for 2 weeks in a hotel here.
Wild.
Not my favorite 2 weeks, but got through it.
When you started shooting, were you nervous? I mean, it's got to be a little unnerving, no matter how many precautions are being taken.
Yes. I mean, a little bit. I mean, my girlfriend and I both actually caught COVID in New York in March of last year. Or this year, what am I talking about? Sorry.
Seems feels like forever
March
ago.
Of last year, but in fact, it's March of this year. We both got sick. Luckily, it was very mild. Had some fevers, and we lost our sense of taste and smell. But after that, we had tested positive for antibodies. You know, there's even questions about how long that lasts. So yeah, I was nervous going back, but I felt pretty confident in our showrunners and comfortable with their handling of the situation and how you know, serious everyone's taking it, and the testing constantly, and the mask wearing, and the social distancing, and basically all the things that, you know, the scientists have been telling us to do. And surprise, surprise, it seems to be working. We haven't had any, you know, any That's positives great. Really. I was, but you know, it's funny too. I think that also this year has like a lot of people, my perspective on things has changed a bit. And, you know, some of the maybe usual nerves of going back to work were definitely there, but I really was just very excited and grateful to just kind of be doing this again in, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And so some of the nerves, I think, of the work side were lessened by the experience of right. living through 2020. Just your perspective changes and, you know, priorities change, I guess.
Priorities change, I think. Yeah. You know, I keep saying this, like, the romantic side of me, the idealistic side of me is that, you know, when we're out on the other side, the priorities that change will stay there. I don't mm-hmm. know if human beings are like that. They yeah. may go back to, you know, worrying about things that didn't mean that much, but there's also security in that, I guess. So yeah, it's wild. Tell me about the first audition you ever went on, whether you got the role or not.
Well, the first audition I ever went on, actually, I remember it. I grew up in Seattle, and there was a program there called Broadway Bound, which is like a children's theater that does it's going on for years, and they were holding auditions for The Wiz. And I went in and auditioned, and I remember going in and being like so nervous and forgetting my monologue. I don't remember what I'd prepared, but completely forgetting it. And like just kind of ad-libbing instead. And I did get a part in the production, but that was my first audition. And also, this actually brings me to just a personal plug that I'd like to make is,
go ahead.
I recently heard that because of COVID and the shutdowns, Broadway Bound is in danger of closing. It's a, you know, it's a niche program, but it's, if you're in Seattle, if you're listening to this and you're in Seattle, or you're listening to this and you're a fan of the arts, please consider, a donation to Broadway Bound. It's a great, company. They've been around for a long, long time. It's like 20,000 kids have gone through their doors. And it was where I first started acting. And, it's a great after-school program. And so, yeah, to any of your listeners, if you feel so compelled, I think you can at broadwaybound.org or something like that.
That's amazing. How old were you when you auditioned for The Wiz?
Young. I don't remember exact. I mean, 11 or 12, maybe.
Yeah. And what was the part that you got? Go ahead.
I was cast as the Monkey King, and I played. The critics didn't know what hit him. Knocked the audience on their ass with that Monkey King. Yeah.
Come on. Do you remember any of your lines?
I don't remember the lines. No, but I do remember. I don't remember. I convinced the director to let me like smoke a fake cigar on stage because I wanted like a mob boss or something with the Monkey King.
At 11 years old, you're already telling the director what you wanted to do.
That's right, baby.
Nick, yeah. This is awesome. Thank you so much. Sure. Good luck up there in Canada. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you.
And stay healthy, stay safe, and hopefully next time I see you, it's in person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Take care.
Take care, Nick. Bye. That was Nick Robinson. Thanks for listening to The Big Ticket. Coming up next time, John Boyega, the Star Wars star, is here to talk about his new work in Steve McQueen's Small Axe on Amazon. Until then, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all your up-to-the-minute Hollywood news, head over to Variety.com. Stay safe, be well, and keep wearing those masks. See you next time.